This is the Let's Get Real Estate Show with your host, Danielle Chason.
Full-time investor, strategic consultant, motivational coach, sought-after speaker,
and host of your number one real estate investing show, Let's Get Real Estate,
where real people are doing real estate.
Hey, everybody. It's Danielle Chason here with the Let's Get Real Estate podcast. This is where I bring to you real people doing real estate, and there is everything real about this guy, Dan Heon, that we got on the show today. Woo, woo. Hey, Dan, how's it going?
Hey, good. Thanks.
So glad to have you on. Not sure how we haven't met before being in the real estate community, but you're on the west side of Canada and I'm more on the east side. So, but after getting to know you a little bit better, you have been doing this for a long time, my friend.
Yeah, coming up, dare I say, close to three decades, right? So, yeah, lots of fun. I like to say I'm one of the fortunate ones that started in my 20s. So, you know, that's a good thing. Time, you know as well as I do, you know, if you can get time and the time value of money and you just roll that money and leverage it, I mean, it can do amazing things in our lives, right? That's what we, cherish so much as being real estate investors.
Absolutely. And you sure did. There's so many real estate investors that say, you know, I wish I started sooner. I wish I started in my 20s. I wish I knew what I know now back then. I'm one of those people that says that same thing. So definitely you were blessed to start out ahead of the game, start out really young. So now what you primarily do, you're a mortgage broker. That's what you ended up doing. And an interesting thing with your backstory, which I would love for you to just share your backstory and how you got into real estate essentially. But from what I understand, it was because the banks were giving you a hard time. So you just moved into being a mortgage broker, which led you to where you are today. So can you share with my audience a little bit about how that came to be?
Yeah, I love telling this story because I tell it as almost like an inspiration story. And I'll rewind it just one step of how I got into real estate, because I've been doing real estate for 26 years and I've been doing the finance mortgage side of it for 21, 22 years. And so on the real estate side, I was working a 9-to-5 job in a mechanic shop, believe it or not. And I'm working with 800 men who all hate their job. And so it was like, okay, I know wealthy people own real estate. I've just got to figure out a way. How does a young guy with a $5,000 credit card, rusty old truck, like, how do I go be the next Donald Trump, right? Somebody show me and I will do this thing. And so, you know, that led me to buy, I think, hire the right mentors and teachers was number one that, you know, kind of got me going. I said, I've got to learn, then apply what I've learned. And I ended up, you know, funny enough, buying 9 properties my first 2 years and becoming financially independent at a ripe old age of 29 years old. And my family's like, what do you do for a living? I said, well, I'm a real estate investor. And you know what that means to you and I today? It was like $1,500 positive cash flow. And I had enough for yellow box groceries and gas for my truck, right? But on paper, I was really starting to look, you know, quite nice on the asset column. But on the income column, you know, it wasn't so lucrative, right? And moving into the finance and the mortgage broker side, what led me into that journey is there came a time, and I still explain this today. I said, I don't care who you are, where you are, what kind of investor are, you will hit what I call like the brick wall, right? It's like you're either going to run out of cash, liquid cash down payments, or the banks are going to stop financing you. I don't care who you are. You can have like this monster net worth. Eventually, you're going to run into that wall too. And so I ran into that in a very early time in my career. And then I had to figure out a way, you know, being young and just committed and determined, had to figure out ways to kind of work around that and keep my business growing, because on paper, I looked like a genius, but the banks were shutting me down. You know, I was exhausted out of capital. And, you know, I knew this stuff really worked. I was witnessing it. I had at this time, I think 6-7 years of, application behind me, and it was really working well. And so I went out and I used a whole bunch of creative financing strategies, you name it. I mean, seller financing, vendor takebacks, agreement for sales, like you name it, all these creative ways to finance your real estate company. And I was able to buy a whole bunch more real estate. But as a young businessman, not owning, you know, a business before this, what I didn't realize is that one day you have to pay all this money back. I'm like, no, I just want to keep buying, buy. Like I was just focused. I want to buy. And all of a sudden, within 6 months, the calls started coming in. Hey, Dan, you've been great. You've been paying me my, at the time, second mortgages were 13%. And of course, that wasn't me paying those lenders. It was, you know, actually at the time it was motivated sellers. That's right. So I'll tell the story about how I got into the mortgage broker world is, I was negotiating seller financing. And if some dude really wants to sell you their house, they're going to sell it to you with really good terms and conditions on that financing. And, eventually the seller says, hey, you know what? Little Billy's going to college. I'm retiring. I need to buy a new car. I'm going to Hawaii. Like I need that money back. And I'm like, oh crap. What am I going to do now? So I think there was a period of time where I had 6 months to come up with $250,000. And as a young guy, asset rich and liquid, poor, right? Like cash flow. I was like, oh my God, I do not want to sell all these properties that work so hard to buy and set up and put good tenants in and all that kind of thing. And so, I just had to figure out a way to get myself out of this situation. And it was really just doing research and, studying and all that kind of thing. And this was back in 2001 when, there was a .com, bust and, you know, Facebook or not Facebook, but some of these tech companies were being overvalued like crazy and it was coming to an end and people were losing money, believe it or not, in their RSPs left, right, and center. So a crazy guy like me, you know, saw that, hey, in the US of A, you can take your 401k and lend it as a mortgage. I'm like, damn, if they can do that in the US, why are we not doing that here in Canada? And believe it or not, in 2001, through a company called Olympia Trust, I set up my very first RSP mortgage through Olympia Trust for my own company, right? So Danielle, if it was your RSP in my real estate, we all know that as a real estate investor, we can transact that, you know, through Olympia Trust and the lawyer and all that kind of stuff. So I did that and I was able to talk to people and it was so easy. You know, often investors today say, you know, how do you raise so much capital? What do you say? And it was so simple. And I say to people, I say, when you're raising capital for your real estate business, it's as simple as going up to somebody in either a networking room or on the street and saying, hey, you know, you can turn every conversation into a real estate conversation, believe it or not, if you're crafty enough. And so I would always end the conversation with, yeah, I got to go cut the grass on my third or fifth rental property. And right away, people are like, third or fifth, like what the hell? And, you know, and eventually you start talking about investments and I say, hey, yeah, have you got, you know, investments in the public market, aka stock market. And they go, yeah, my RSPs are like doing terrible. I lost, you know, 50 grand here. And that's where I brought up the idea. And I said, hey, did you know that you can take those RSPs and lend them against my real estate and have an asset backing that investment? And they go, no, is that legal? Can you do that? I've never heard of that. How come my bank doesn't teach me about this? And it's like, wow, that's crazy. And so I very early figured out, okay, I need a lawyer on my team. I need Olympia. I need to figure out the logistics of how this works. And a good buddy of mine by the name of Eldon Palm and I were kind of the pioneers in what's now called RSP mortgages, right? So very cool. I've been doing those for 22 years now. So it's really good. But what happened, and this is what led me into the mortgage broker world, was, hey, I just replaced 0 to 1% seller financing with 12 to 13% second mortgage lenders. My cash flow is SHIT, right? So I was like, oh my God, now I got to get out and go get a job. I didn't like that. I wanted to spend 40 hours a week going and finding more real estate deals, right? And so I soon discovered saying, hey, you know what? I've applied for, you know, a gazillion mortgages. One of my best friends is my mentor, my mortgage broker, and he would tell me how to get mortgages and what to do. And at the same time, I saw this need in the marketplace of people who had all this RSP capital and didn't know about RSP mortgages. And I thought, hey, you know what? If I become a mortgage broker, then I can take Daniel, your money and lend it on Sam or Betty's real estate. and be the middleman and be the broker. And I'll just charge, you know, at the time, my big idea was I'll charge $500 and put the two parties together, and then my cash flow will go back up, right? So it worked out pretty good. And I said, okay. And my broker took me on under his wing, taught me everything he knew. And he was one of the best in the industry at that time. So every time my business as a broker hit a new level, I would go to Sheldon and I would say, hey, buddy, I can't seem to get my business past a certain level. And it was so nice to have somebody who had been there and done that and say, oh, this is all you have to do. You have to restructure your business. Then you too can become one of the top brokers in Canada. And I was like, this is amazing. So really teaching, mentoring and all of that. But funny enough story, how it was almost necessity that pushed me into the mortgage broker world. And then as a community, you know, 20, 21 years ago, there wasn't a lot of resources around like there is today. I mean, I think in Western Canada, I was the only guy that was, you know, doing investment mortgages at the time out in Western Canada. And so, you know, very fast, my name in the community became, hey, if you're running into troubles, all the things that we faced as a real estate investor, you better go talk to that Dan guy. So, you know, that's kind of what I've been doing all these years, and I absolutely love it. And what my clients like is that, you know, I face the same challenges as pretty much everybody else. I've made the same mistakes. I've, you know, been there, done that. So we can talk about all the financing struggles and challenges and say, hey, this is how I worked around that challenge. And thousands of my other clients have done the same thing. So that's a cool story. I like to say it to inspire people. No matter what you're facing in your life, there's always a way to kind of keep it going and work around it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great story. Like out of necessity, just to get financing is how you kind of got into becoming a broker. You needed financing for yourself and you also needed some cash flow. And so you decided to do that as a career, which was very much in alignment with what you wanted to, where you wanted to spend your time. So the two kind of complemented each other very well and it's worked out very well for you. So I love that. Absolutely love that.
Yeah, it's awesome. And they say that you're in the right job when you would do it, whether you get paid or not, Danielle. And for me, I totally, people, you know, would say, why are you still working if you own all this real estate? I said, I work because I choose to work, not because I have to work. It's like, you know, anytime I can pay it forward, you know what I'm saying? It's like when I was in my 20s, there was, you know, people much older and more successful than me who were kind of investing and pouring into my business. And now this is a way that I get paid by the banks and, you know, doing larger projects, I can get paid to invest and help out, you know, everybody else bring their business to, you know, to the next level.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when we're talking about kind of building a plan and what kind of financing you need and the challenges around financing, what would you see as the biggest issue that real estate investors encounter in today's market?
I think the biggest thing that real estate investors face today is bank financing. I mean, there's no question in my mind that the federal government of Canada has, in an effort to slow the real estate market, made it 10 times more difficult for us as real estate. You know what? Forget that. Canadians in general, if you're buying your own home, you still face some of the challenges, but even more so as a real estate investor. And I think that is probably the number one challenge in today's world. If you're just starting out, you know, my recommendation for you is to get as much of the bank money as you can until you hit that wall. Then you have to, you know, meet people like yourself or myself and kind of say, hey, I can't grow my business any further. How do I keep going? Danielle, how did you do it? Dan, how did you do it? And, you know, kind of learn from those people who have been there and done that. And I think the challenge, number one challenge is, you know, getting bank financing today is much, much harder. You know, in 2006, we used to joke about it. That was my highest volume years in the mortgage field. If you could fog a mirror, the banks were giving you money, right? It was kind of, that was the joke. So it was like job letter, pay stub, sign here, boom, there's your, you know, $500,000, away you go. But in today's world, we still, as real estate investors, need to understand it. We need to work within the system. We need to use it. And people say, well, why? And the reason why is it's still, in my opinion, the least expensive money that we as real estate investors can have access to. So we want to use it as much as possible, expand, leverage it, grow our business to that extent, but then also transition into these other methods of buying real estate once we hit that wall, right? So I think that's the number one, thing that we as real estate investors. So, you know, find an investment specialist, mortgage broker, learn from them what works, what doesn't work. You'll save yourself a ton of grief. Your relationships will be better because just imagine, Daniel, if you are working with, a top-notch investment real estate agent, you find a perfect deal and you go to your corner store, big five banker who's at a branch who just got out of college and, you know, has done processed five mortgages before. And you're putting that deal on the line for somebody who is kind of learning what to do on your deal. Not good, right? And you're going to basically piss off that amazing real estate agent that has worked so hard to find you that best deal and your guy can't put it together. So I think, you know, my advice on that is really learn what works, what doesn't work so that you can navigate that system, if you will, to get your business. You know, you can go to a regular banker and get one or two properties. I'm not saying no, you know, that's not the difficulty, but instead of two properties, if you can squeeze that to 4, 5, 6, or 7, your business is going to, you know, launch to that next level, you know, much, much easily and inexpensively. But, you know, so that's the first challenge, I think that people face. And the second one is, like we talked about, is, okay, the banks will give me two more mortgages, but I'm out of down payments. Like, oh my gosh, like I can get mortgages. What then? And, I don't know what your experience, but, you know, working with joint venture people is a way to kind of get to that next level where you're a bit strapped for down payment, but the banks will give you a bit of mortgages a bit further, I guess, and go from there. So I always find in myself and in my clients, environments, they find it difficult to ask for money. And I think this is like a barrier that everybody goes through. You know I can make myself money, but when I'm taking your money and investing it, it's a little, there's something, the dynamic changes. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Because there's a higher level of responsibility when you're dealing with somebody else's money, right?
Yeah. Do you remember your first time you did your first JV deal? What was that like?
Well, I'm probably a bad example. My first JV deal was with my ex, life partner. And so, we kind of did it together and we weren't married. So we did partner on this deal where he was the passive partner, the capital partner, and I was the working partner. But again, that took the stress off for me, and gave me that experience that I needed in order to make it happen. And I know a lot of people in that come into real estate, that's more of an angel investor, somebody in your inner circle, in your network that you partner with in order to kind of get your feet wet, build that experience. So then you can go into more of an outer circle and deal with people you don't know. And that also gives you the confidence in order to do that. So that was the steps that I took, which kind of helped me out a little bit, but it doesn't take away from the fact that when I did work with other people's money, that did put a lot more pressure on. And you do have a higher responsibility when you're dealing with other people's money, and whether they're angel investors or an investor you've just met in a real estate room, you should always, always protect your investors. That's what I live by.
Totally. You know what? I couldn't agree more. I mean, those points are awesome. And I think it boils down to kind of what you're saying is relationships, right? Like you had the relationship with your former partner and, you know, you kind of, I always say you have to know the person or they have to know you. They have to like you, right? And they have to trust you, right? If you don't have those three things, just as you're talking about, nobody's going to write that check, right? So how many times do we see in a brand new, rookie networking meeting and you walk up to some stranger and say, hey, can you write me a check for 200 grand? It's like, forget it. Like, I don't know anybody. Maybe once or twice in the past 26 years have I heard that happening, but very rarely, right? So it's all about relationship building. And I love what you're doing and, you know, your community, because I really firmly believe that, you know, special relationships can start there and then build from there. So just by networking, I think, you know, in my years, I can attribute my growth to my mortgage practice and my investment practice from, you know, all the communities that I've been part of, right? So you know, good for you for kind of doing what you do and bringing those like-minded people together. So, did we cover off all of the financing challenges, or, I mean, we can certainly go into some of the more elaborate challenges that we as investors face as we go up that ladder, but was there anything else that you think we missed or we should cover?
Yeah, when you answered, I mean, you answered that beautifully. So thank you for that. Absolutely. I think I 100% agree with you that as an investor, you always want to have the cheapest money, which is a conventional banks. And if you can get that, you want to maximize that as much as you can. And then you will hit a wall at some point. But you did say like you could go to a mom and pop or corner like a lender and deal with them yourself. But of course, they're not well equipped to deal with investors, and especially if you're a self-employed investor. And so I just wanted to point out that, and I say this all the time on the show and to my students, you have to have investor-friendly professionals on your team, period. And so I want to point out that you don't need to go to the bank direct. You can still get an investor-friendly mortgage broker that in the beginning, like Dan, that in the beginning can help you get that conventional financing, that cheaper financing. And actually, they know how to structure it to maximize how many mortgages you can get with across the big banks in order to get that cheaper money. So, So I always say, you know what, go with the mortgage broker. At the end of the day, it's going to cost you a little bit more, but it's going to actually save you money because they'll structure the best deal that they can for you. And they'll actually put the deal together for you so don't lose it, so you don't have opportunity loss. Like you said, like having a deal that just falls apart because you just got the wrong person doing the financing for you. So absolutely, absolutely love everything you just said there. Just kind of wanted to highlight a couple of really key important things that you had mentioned there. But when it comes to going with a mortgage broker too, the other thing is that they also have the network of having some private lenders on their Rolodex and some B lenders and knowing kind of what those lenders are looking for in the criteria and to best position you for that. So what is it you do exactly when you're positioning a client to be in a better, I guess, in a better, to have a stronger application for that B lending?
As they're finishing up the regular A financing, is that what we're talking about? Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're, because there's certain things that, you know, lenders, whether A lenders or B lenders or even private lenders, there's certain things that certain criteria that lenders look at that will make it more favorable for you. So let's talk about favorable for you as a client, as a borrower. So let's talk about like what things can you do as a real estate investor to better put yourself in a position to be attractive as a borrower.
To be attractive. I mean, I can pull up my thinking as a banker and spew that all out. And you're like, oh my God, those guys think so crazy. What's going on? And the weirdest thing is, you know, half of my brain thinks like a total investor, and I've had to train my brain the other half to think like a banker. And in between is where I find solutions, right? So if I was to answer that question is what do we as real estate investors need to consider to make ourselves look more attractive? I can say, invariably that banks are looking for a bit of liquidity. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God, Daniel, if, you know what hits the fan, how are you going to bail yourself out? If you take my money and you run into a little bit of a downturn, like we saw, you know, in Ontario, a little bit of a, you know, 20% pullback, but then obviously we came back. If you run into that situation, do you have the wherewithal, the smarts, the knowledge, and the liquidity to kind of fall back and float yourself through a tough time? And what that talks about is if you go into a B lender and you're leveraged, you've got every dollar, every penny, every piece of credit maxed to the nines because you're out making money, one small correction will wipe you out. And actually, I've learned that one the hard way too. So, you know, I think that's number one. Credit scores are so, so very important. If we have like 2 or 3 minutes, I know we're on a time constraint here, but I'll touch on really quickly. Not a lot of people know this. The three main areas that will keep your credit score as high as possible. So number one is credit checks. And I'll go through these, you know, for people. So I would say you don't want any more than one, you know, one credit check per month, three credit checks in any given 30-day window. It's after that, you really start going down like you're a credit seeker and that you're getting declined, right? So three per month is very critical. Any more than that, your score is going to start coming down, right? So that's really important to know. So plan out your credit checks. So you know you're going to go to a mortgage and you're going to be, you know, don't go out leasing the car and leasing this and getting a new Visa card the day before you're going to apply for that fourth or fifth house. So that's number one, really important. Number two is the percentages of usership, we call it. So, you know, if you have a $20,000 Visa, try as much as possible, especially when you're going into a loan application, to keep that below the 50% loan to value. Your score will stay very, very high if you don't go above the 50 to 60% maximum of that card that it has available, I guess, right? And so we got the credit checks, the usability of you know, how much you're using of your credit that's available. And then the third one is kind of how much credit do you have? People often ask, what is the ideal amount of credit? And in my mind, I call it like the 222 rule. I call it two credit cards for at least 2 years with at least $2,000 on them. So, you know, this is a really key one. I often get asked, oh, you know, I got a $40,000 offer from Bank A. They want to give it to me, but I'm not really sure if I want to take it. And my answer to that is, sure, take it, but, you know, just don't use it, especially right before you're buying the house. Maybe after you bought the house, you want to use it for Home Depot materials or something like that. Sure, go ahead, but make sure it's paid off right before you go to refinance that property, right? So there's some important keys that, you know, I think people need to understand in terms of keeping their credit score really high, the liquidity, and, you know, cash flow on their other properties. I think that's another key piece that, you know, it's important. If you're buying properties that are $2 million and they're all underwater $400, $500, $600 a month, people already say you can't expand. You can't scale. You know what I mean? In a negative way. People will see right through that. So you often see in a mortgage application, you know, what is your rents? What are the taxes? What are the insurance? What are your property management? That lender is looking at, you know, can you sustain, you know, your current business and all your assets? And especially again, people often say, well, why does the bank only use 50% of rents? And what they're doing is they're factoring in a downturn in the market. You know, that's simply what they're doing. So conservative banks put it through the worst case scenario. And if they like you, they're going to give you the money. So B lenders tend to focus a lot more on equity, right? So that's the other thing is, you know, leverage, you want to kind of watch where you're at with that. So it's easier for me to get an equity or a B loan on a property where I'm bringing more skin on the game. And maybe they don't really care and look at my income tax returns. They're more looking at the equity in the deal. And what they're doing there, Danielle, is simply saying, hey, if you mess up, we're not expecting you to mess up, but if you do mess up, my lawyer can take the house away, sell it, and get my money back, right? So, you know, I think you can expect really high leverage on a B, you know, category lender. And also another thing that's important on the B side is they tend to really like larger centers of population. So I think, you know, if you're going sub 100,000 population areas, you're going to find it difficult to get those B lenders, even C lenders for that matter. One of my clients is doing a deal in just outside of Sault Ste. Marie, most gorgeous commercial condo project right on the waterfront, ideal. I shopped pretty much every lender I've got out there. They wouldn't touch it because of the remote, small geographic, demographic area location. So I think that's important as you plan out, you know, your next step in your business is to be aware of these things.
Absolutely. Because then if you're aware, you don't get caught blind with these problems that show up because, and this happens all the time. You have investors in larger areas and then they go, oh, there's a great investment opportunity over there. I've never had a problem getting financing. Then all of a sudden they're hitting that financing wall that they just weren't prepared for. And that's because the market is different. And so the lenders are absolutely going to view it differently too. There's a lot there to unpack. I'm going to start with the credits. Like, yes, don't get more than 3 credit checks a month on your report. Absolutely. That's a big one. So yeah, there's some leniency when you're getting the hits because they know that if you have a mortgage application that you're going to have some credit. That's the other thing too. I just want to point out when you're dealing with a mortgage broker, they can pull your credit report once and shop it around to 6, 7, 8, 10 different lenders that they feel would be favorable to you and not have to pull the credit that many times in order to get an answer from those lenders. So that is one great benefit too. And I think that's where people get caught. They'll go to like 3 different banks because they're shopping it themselves and they don't have a mortgage broker, and then they get those 3 hits, right? So that's a big one. And then the debt to credit ratio that you talk about is massive. I think a lot of people miss that. When I get an offer from a bank for any credit, I'm always a yes person because it lowers the debt to credit ratio on my credit score and it helps protect my credit. So that is one thing a lot of people ask me all the time. It's like, yeah, take it. Yeah, take it. The other reason why is because when you need it is usually when you won't get approved for it. So you want to make sure, right? So you want to make sure.
Exactly. So true. It's like, oh, I don't need credit. Oh, I have hundreds of thousands of it. Oh my God, I need credit. Oh, sorry. No, you're tapped, right? Oh my God. That's the story of everyone's life. It's crazy.
That's right. So take it. Telling you, take it when they give it to you because it does help your credit score, but it also helps you in the moments that you need it. So, anyhow, and then yeah, like there's just so much there that you unpack that, wow, I just don't even know where to go with all of that.
You know what? This is jogging my memory on 2 other little very important tidbits for people. Obviously, you know, making sure that you hit those minimum payments, right? So important. I don't care if it's $25. Put that stuff on autopilot. I can't tell you, you know, oh, it's only $30. I missed it. No, because in the bank in the future looks back and see you missed one payment. They can't see that payment was only $20 or whatever. You know, it's so important. And then, you know, it takes you X amount of time to recover from that little black spot on your markets, on your report, sorry. So, you know, making sure those minimum payments are made every month without fail. I mean, if you can outsource that to a bookkeeper, a spouse, a partner, anybody, if you're not good at it like me, make sure somebody's taking care of it. That is gold. And the other thing on that, is if you ever do find yourself in, you know, really tough times, make damn sure you pay the mortgage one first. Okay. Like, you know what I mean? If I had a choice, I was facing financial difficulty and I had 3 choices, mortgage, visa, line of credit, those mortgages, it's harder for me to get a mortgage for someone who missed a mortgage payment than somebody who had been bankrupt and rebuild their credit, you know, for 3 years and never missed one mortgage payment. Believe it or not, it's harder for me if they've messed up on a mortgage, you know, on your credit reports, the M series, if you have M1, M2, M3, meaning you've missed 3 mortgage payments in a row, that is like you've got the plague. I mean, honestly, and B lenders the same, right? So they're a little bit more flexible if you have the equity, but on all honesty, that file is going to the bottom of the pile. So, you know, on priority wise, if you had to miss a visa payment and then make that up later, totally okay. But you miss the mortgage, it's like, we call it the kiss of death, right? That's like, oh my God, there's not much I can do for you. So those are 2 other little pieces as we're wrapping up credit that I find very important, helpful.
Yeah. I love that. I didn't even know that about the mortgage thing. Yeah, and probably because I just never missed it because I always just have. Yeah, here's the thing though.
No, you're the rock star. You're the rock star. Never missed one.
No, it's not that. Listen, I just know my weaknesses, and I think it's important for people to really, like you said, I suck at paying my credit cards. That's what you said, and so do I because we're busy. We're busy in our businesses, and it's like the last thing. That's on the to-do list, right? It's like, yeah, I'll get to it tomorrow. I got this going on today. So there's always a bigger fire, it feels like. to be dealing with. So what I do with my credit cards, like my mortgage, it's all on pre-authorized debit. It automatically comes out of the account. And so I don't have to worry about it. So all my credit cards have the pre-authorized debit, and every month it comes out, is the pre-authorized debit is for the minimum payment, so that, you know, I just have a nice clean score and I don't have to worry about it.
That's so smart, because then you're guaranteed you're never going to miss. And, you know, to add to that, a few years ago, cell phone companies were allowed to go on there. I'm like, before that, cell phone companies were never, never allowed to go onto their credit bureau. But probably, oh, I want to say 5 years or give or take, cell phone companies, Rogers, Fidos, Virgin, all those ones. And how easy is it just to say, oh crap, I forgot my cell phone bill. Now they're putting a ding on your credit. So another thing, if you can, like you, Danielle, put it on pre-authorized debit if you can, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just the easier way to do it. And then that way you don't have to worry about it. But now, you know, now they have notifications too, where, you know, they'll text you that your payment is due. If you see it, just pay it right away. That way it's done. You don't have to worry about it if you don't want to do pre-authorized debit, right? I know some people don't like it, but personally, I just think it's brilliant. It saves me a lot of time. And then when I'm ready to sit down and pay them off, I just sit down and take the 2 hours that I need to go through it all. But we're busy. We're busy, Dan. It's just how it goes, right? So you got to work with what you got.
I mean, if you're a real estate investor, you're out, you know, time is spent finding deals and putting deals together, not paying that $20 cell phone bill. So, but it is so important, as we talked about, right? Somebody's got to take care of that.
Absolutely. Well, you're right, Dan. Like, this half hour has just flown by, and I love all of the tidbits and the ninja tips that you just dropped for everybody. There's, like I said, there's some stuff in there that I didn't know. So I want to thank you for that, for being so open and sharing and educating me and my audience. Before we sign off, though, I do have a couple of questions that I like to sign off with. And the first one being, what would you tell your former self?
Oh, man. I would tell my former self that it's okay to make mistakes. You know, that's how we learn. A good mentor of mine said, fail forward. You know, if you're going to fail, fall forward, get up, and you're way further than you were behind. I think over the years, I would make mistakes and I would beat the crap out of myself. I'd be like, oh my God, like, who am I? I just borrowed this person's 100,000 and I'm only paying them back 80, and oh, this was horrible. This sucks. I never want to do this again. And, you know, it's really about, you know, learning from those mistakes, right? Because in those situations where I did have a failed project, I think that's important. In 26 years, if I was to believe that every single project I'm going to do in the future is going to make money, that person needs to be educated, right? I think, you know, in this whole thing, going back to my former self, it's about, you know, it's okay. Be responsible for the mistakes you've made. Fix the mistakes. Commit. Be driven. Move forward. Learn from it and fix the wrongs. I really believe that, you know, that's what I would tell my former self.
Yeah, I love that. I don't believe mistakes either, Dan. I've reframed it. They're not mistakes. They're lessons.
There. I love that. There. Yep. Yep.
And so, right? Yeah, there's no mistakes, just lessons. That's what we learn, right? That's where we learn, we grow. So the other question that I want to ask is, what's next for Dan? What's next for Dan?
Wow. So now, like, I've got two land development companies. I just bought a general contracting company. And, you know, I have staff that kind of help the beginner investor, but I've really kind of, unfortunately, time is limited, as you know, and I've really kind of focused on taking successful investors, the ones that have, you know, kind of gone through that one level to say, hey, you know what, I've got a good portfolio, I've got this joint venture thing down, I can raise capital. My heart is really on taking that person and launching them to a super high level that they never dreamed possible. Like, my one company's got an offer out right now on a $300 million oceanfront development, and that's super exciting. So that's on my future. And really getting out there and taking successful people and bringing them up to that next level.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And so essentially your firm is going to be able to, well, it is able to, because I actually know that, it is able to help the first-time investor all the way through to the experienced investor. And that's really just based on your expertise. I mean, you have staff that will deal with newer investors and help walk them through the process. And you're there supporting that staff, educating that staff to help them through it. But then you're also working with seasoned investors and taking them to the next level because you're moving up to the next level yourself, which is absolutely incredible. I know we talked about that $300 million deal. I'm super excited to see where that's going to go. It's in a beautiful area in Canada. Love it. Absolutely love that area. And yeah, so I'm excited to hear more about Dan Heon and see where it goes. Woo, woo. So exciting.
Yeah, so we do mortgages all across Canada. And if my staff are helping out on a beginning deal and there's a little bit of twist or something irregular on it, then they call me in on a conference call and I join in with my staff and the client and we figure it out, right? That kind of stuff. So not to say that, I'm not accessible and can't help out for every situation, but yeah, it just, there's a lot of time that's required and, I'm just busy with other projects, but still available for my clients and, help anyone anywhere with any kind of size of project. So, we love what we do.
Yes, just the way most brokerages are set up as. So if anybody wanted to work with you, with your team, how would they get a hold of you?
Probably the easiest is they could go to my website, danheon.com. H-E-O-N is how my last name is spelled. And there's a red button on there that is probably the easiest. Elaine at my office is a fully licensed broker and has 6-7 years of working with me. Or myself, we've actually got a Calendly appointment scheduler right there. You just simply plug yourself in and we talk and chat and figure out where you're at and where you're going.
And if you don't know what a Calendly link is yet, don't worry about it. Just click the link that says book a call with me and then just follow the prompts and then it'll just hit your inbox. So love that. And yeah, Dan, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I appreciate you.
What a pleasure. Absolute pleasure to hang out with you and, you know, share some of the lessons that you and I have learned over the years and kind of help educate others, right? I mean, I think you're a lot like me. It's like paying it forward and helping those people kind of get to that level that we've seen. And because, you know, I think, you know, it becomes once you move past the, it's doing it for the money, you're doing it for the, positive energy. I don't know, you know, how you describe that, but it's like, you know, it feels good to bring others along that same path and that same journey.
Yeah, it really does actually. Educating others really is my purpose now. And, just because it gives me a sense of purpose, it really makes me feel fulfilled when I know that I had a very small part in helping somebody find their success and take ownership of their personal finances. So I know you feel the same way. That's why we surround ourselves with like-minded people and together we are better. We just continue to grow together. So again, love that you took some time out of your very busy day to come and share. And boy, did you ever, and you did not disappoint. So thank you so much, Dan, for sharing with my audience and helping them grow. I appreciate having you on and look forward to seeing all of the development deals that are coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, super awesome, Danielle. Thank you again so much for you and all that you do and your network. I love it. So lots of success to you. And I'm sure we'll cross paths many, many times here in the future.
This is just the beginning, Dan. Just the beginning. I love it.
You bet, Danielle. Plus, I love your name, Danielle. I mean, doesn't get better than that, right?
Something else we have in common, Dan.
Exactly. That's so cool.
All right, cool. So I'm going to sign off. So this is Danielle Chason signing off of the Let's Get Real Estate podcast. This is where I bring to you real people doing real estate. Bye for now.
That was so cool. That was so cool. That was like some good energy, some good everything. We didn't have to like stop and rewind 5 times and oh my God, it was good. Yeah, that's, I have to really watch on these kinds of things because there's just way too much up here. And I'm like, oh my God, no, it's like this, you know, if it's just a quick download, I'm like, oh my God, whoa, we got to rewind, recap, summarize. I'm like, whoa. So I think, okay, good, because. Yeah, I'm so glad you do that, because sometimes it's just like way too much up here, and then into the download, I'm like, oh my God, I just delivered like a gazillion amount of content. Now we're like, oh crap, we should have like smaller bite size. So you did it. You did an amazing job. Hey everybody, this is Dan Heon. I'm on the Let's Get Real podcast with Danielle Chason, and we just had an amazing time together with tons and tons of information. We covered things like what every investor should know when they're going to get, you know, their credit and get to that next level, how to maximize, you know, the least expensive money available to us. So tons and tons of other good stuff like that. And it's a fantastic event. Come hang out. Oh, I didn't know how to finish it, Chip. Oh, enjoy the show. Okay. I'm going to just type that because my mind was drawing a blank and I'm like, oh shit. Okay. Hey everybody, it's Dan Heon. I'm on the real, oh my God. Yeah, right? Okay. Yeah, you can't record these and make everybody laugh with the bloopers, right? Oh my God. So hold on, I said it right the first time and now my mind, so it's the, oh my God. Yeah, let's get, yeah, okay. Yeah, I knew that, I don't know why. That's good. Okay, I'm ready. Here we go. Try this again. Hey, everybody. It's Dan Heon. I'm with Danielle Chason on the Let's Get Real podcast. Awesome time. Oh my God. Let's get real estate. And you know what? I got that right. Oh my. Okay. Thank you. Hey, everybody. It's Dan Heon. I'm with Danielle Chason on the Get Real Estate podcast. Let's get real. Okay, I want to copy this because I need to laugh at myself on this one. I'm like, bleh, I talk for a living. I should know this. All right, let's try this one. All right. Hey, everybody, it's Dan Heon. I'm with Danielle Chason on the Let's Get Real Estate podcast. We've got an amazing show coming together. It's, you know, tons of lots and lots of valuable tips and tidbits. And we're just unpacking all of this crazy knowledge and experience together with Danielle. And things like, you know, here are the three main things that you need to know about your credit to maximize that so that you look nice and pretty when you're going for that mortgage, and when to watch for those things, and a whole bunch of tips and tricks and some stories, some crazy stories from my own investing career and all of that stuff. So amazing, amazing time, amazing, amazing host. Enjoy the show. Okay. So I'm just writing those things down that I want to cover on there. Okay. What? So there was, I'm going to tell you. Yeah, we are going to cover credit tips. And there was what? Credit tips, the options, and share my story. Okay. All right. Let's try this one more time, but then I just want to be really clear because, we want to get this right. We're going to cover credit tips, financing options, and share my story with tips on helping you learn, and my story for you to learn how to grow. Did that sound right? Yeah. Okay. All right. Hey everybody, it's Dan Heon. I'm here with Danielle Chason on the Let's Get Real Estate podcast. And we have an amazing time together to show you a whole bunch of amazing things. Like we're going to cover some credit tips. We're going to cover some, financing options, some different methods and ways to get financing to grow your business. And even a few stories of my own, tips and tricks from that to help you grow and grow your business to the next level. Thanks so much. Enjoy the show. There. Oh my gosh. That was like too funny. I'm like, screw up. Oh my God. Yeah, right. I don't know how you do it. I'm like, you're a seasoned veteran at this now.
Thanks so much for listening to our podcast and congratulations on improving your education real estate.
Please leave a review only if you felt we provided value, as it would really help us if you would leave a 5-star review so that we can help reach a broader audience.
And don't forget to comment what you enjoyed and tell us what you are looking to learn more about.
As always, thanks for your support and we'll see you on the next episode.